Good afternoon, everyone. I want to wish everyone happy holidays at this time. And the December 16th, 2025 regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. We will pause for the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
Oh, it's over at that. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Move the flags on.
For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation, and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner, should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a blue speaker card and give it to the staff. If you're participating virtually, use your raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you'll be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item. If you want to speak on a petition, once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you wish to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if in person, fill out the speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then address any additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. And the first order of business is the approval of the agenda.
Post motion to accept to approve the agenda.
One second.
It's been properly moved and second. All those in favor, voice vote.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Next, we have notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. This morning at 11 a.m., we had a finance committee meeting where we discussed the budget. No votes were taken. And we also had a personnel committee meeting to discuss personnel matters at 11:30. No votes were taken at that meeting either. Next, we have items requested to be removed from the final agenda. There are none. After that, we have items requested to be withdrawn. Special use permit, establish a parking facility in the TC1 zoning district at 2909 and 2913 Bull Street. That item has been withdrawn, so that will not be in consideration for this meeting. Next, we move to the consent agenda. We have approval of the October 7th, 2025 MPC minutes, the approval of the October 28th, 2025 MPC meeting minutes, major subdivision Edgewater at New Hampstead Phase 2B, major subdivision The Pines at New Hampstead Phase 5A. Need a motion for the consent agenda.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Prior to that, we need to make a motion for the item requested to be withdrawn.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you. Is there a motion for the item to be withdrawn?
So moved.
Full second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Now we'll move on to the consent agenda. Motion for the consent agenda, please.
So moved. Plonk.
Why would you second?
It's been properly moved and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Next, we'll move into old business. Special use permit to establish a hotel in TC1 zoning district at 2512 Haversham Street, 25-005273-CA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here at the MPC. Our first petition today is making a return from our last meeting where it was continued. Again, it's 2512 Haversham. This is a request to establish a small hotel within the TC1 zoning district. It's important to note at this juncture that this application was filed prior to council's consideration of a total prohibition on the development of hotels in the lower three historic districts. At the last council meeting, that petition was approved. The petition of the neighborhood associations, and currently hotel development within these three districts is not permitted. And so an approval of today's request would be inconsistent with this recent development. Nonetheless, the petitioner is requesting a special use permit to establish a small hotel, 16 to 74 rooms within the TC1 zoning district. Per the ordinance, a hotel motel is a lodging establishment for transient guests with more than 15 guest rooms. 15 rooms would be regarded as an inn. The subject property is within the Streetcar Local Historic District, which is proposed for inclusion in the expanded hotel overlay. Again, that was at the time. And the ordinance would typically permit up to 74 guest rooms were this to be permitted. To show you a view of the future land use map, you can see the subject parcels indicated for traditional commercial use. Here, this is near the intersection of Victory and Habersham Street. This is just in that corner of the district, TC1, it adjoins some TN2. To offer you some background, the subject property, again, is within the Streetcar Local Historic District, but not the Thomas Square National Listed Historic District. The property is about 13,700 square feet, and it's a two-story structure built in 1930. It was originally classified as an office, though it's had multiple uses, and the structure is not indicated as contributing on the resource map. There are 22 off-street parking spaces currently on the parcel. With regard to the permitting history on this project, a permit was issued for this project previously. It currently indicates that the proposed use is to be a hotel motel, though some subsequent research has indicated that the request was originally for an apartment use. Nonetheless, the applicant is in possession of a permit for the construction of a hotel motel use from the permitting authority. In looking at the criteria for this use, there are several that we look at, but the first is whether a special use is consistent with the intent, goals, strategies, policies, and guiding principles of comprehensive plan. As you recall, MPC staff's recommendation was consistent with one of those found within the study that was conducted at the request of the city. And so the petitioner's proposal is consistent with staff's original view on this, in that it does align with several aspects of the comprehensive plan, principally through the adaptive reuse of a historic structure. Again, this is a structure that is not currently indicated as a contributing structure, but were it to be reassessed today, it is likely among those that would be included in a survey. Preservation and adaptation of an existing structure is one of the key strategies that is promoted within our comprehensive plan. We know the Streetcar District is prized for its historic character, and at a proposed maximum of 21 rooms, the hotel is consistent with the scale of the lodging establishments that you would ordinarily find in this district, particularly in that it would be wholly contained within an existing building. Here are some artistic renderings of what the use would look like in the future. You can see the exterior from view from Habersham, as well as the proposed guest lobby. With that, MPC staff does recommend approval with the one condition that this hotel use not contain more than 21 guest rooms. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Morrow. Is the petitioner here?
Yes. The petitioner's representative, Mr. Bolton, is here.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Bolton. I'm representing Vintage Builders, Inc. We agree with staff recommendation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of the petitioner? All right. Yes, Mr. Miller.
Hi, Mr. Bolton. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you doing?
Doing good. Good to see you. Can you describe the nature of some of the, I think this project has gone through perhaps a few permitting issues or events with this building that there's some discrepancies with what was allowed in zoning and what was not allowed in zoning. And I think there was likely, speaking as a city manager, a mistake on the city's part. With issuing some of those permits. Are you familiar with those? Can you recount for MPC what some of those issues were?
Well, the main issue was that at the time that the building permit was approved, the special use permit had not been applied for. And that was brought to our attention when we submitted a permit to remove the elevator. And that's what started this process. other than the uses, you know, been allowed. I think there was at one time the I think there was a question about converting it to apartments, and then we realized that some of the apartments did not meet the minimum size.
Right. And it was originally submitted as a multifamily project, right?
Apartments. Multifamily, but the intent had been a hotel the whole time. But I think the architect on the header on the permit stage had apartments down there, multifamily.
But the zoning on the property wouldn't allow for a hotel use.
No, the zoning does allow for a hotel use with special use permit from city council.
Right. It allows with a special use, but currently the zoning does not allow for it without a special
without use. Special use. Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So the petition, the permit coming in as multifamily was fairly germane to the city's review of the original project and approval of the permit as multifamily because that was allowed in the current zoning.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. And then and I know you were familiar with all of this permitting process given your prior
18 and a half years. Yes.
So it was originally submitted as multifamily. The designs, when it got to building code, flagged that the designs for the building did not meet multifamily specifications. Is that true?
There were a couple of rooms, units in there that did not meet the minimum square footage.
Okay. And at that time, the use was changed?
Actually, the use was changed before that because that was identified on an addendum. Mm-hmm. That came in when we were removing the elevator. Okay.
And what work has been done on site per those approved permits?
The building has been gutted and framed. Insulation is in. The sprinkler system is in. It's waiting for drywall.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Ms. Jarrett, did you have a question?
I was just the confusion about whether it was multifamily or a hotel is kind of, I can't quite figure out. It was permitted as multifamily, but the intent was to do a hotel the whole time?
Actually, the permit was permitted for a hotel motel.
But you...
The permit that was issued in March of this year.
Okay. The issue with the multifamily, I guess, is just what kind of confuses me. That came before the permit was. So you figured out that you couldn't do multifamily and switch to hotel motel.
No, the motel came up, you know, in 23 after the use approval for the building permit.
Okay, so the building permit came before the use was decided? The building permit people decided the use?
No, the building permit was approved. The intent was a hotel the whole time. The building permit application, extremely clear on the chronologically of it, but the when it was changed to hotel motel, but the intent from the owner was a hotel motel all the time. But I think the initial application, the wrong box was checked. And so it was assumed that it was going to be multifamily.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for the petitioner? All right. I've got a few speaker cards here. Mr. Craig Simpson. Give 2 minutes to each speaker, please.
Thank you. My name is Craig Simpson. I live at 410 East Victory Drive, and the back of our house and actually our bedroom and everything faces their parking lot of this proposed hotel. We have major concerns with this coming through. First of all, by allowing our understanding is by allowing the 21 rooms in that they do not have to have 24-hour supervision. And that is just
I have been in hotel management, or was in hotel management, for years before I changed careers when I moved to Savannah. And that is, to have 21 rooms and not have 24-hour staff is just unbelievable that it would even be allowed. And my understanding is if it goes from 15 to 21, it takes away that 24 hours. So why would somebody allow that in a residential area is my first question. There's supposedly 24 parking spaces there. There's actually a flooding area that's in the back southeast corner of that property. And that flooding area would eliminate at least 6 parking places. It has been that way for ever since we have lived there, that area. What's crazy to me, and it shows how little this owner has paid attention to that property, is that he made a comment at the Thomas Square meeting that he did not know that that ever flooded. And it floods every time we have any type of a heavy rain. Even the rain that we had just a week and a half ago, the whole parking lot behind us was totally flooded and came across and wiped out that whole little L area that would, again, at least 6 parkings. The other major concern is there is trash night, and there is only 5 to 6 parking spaces on one side of the street. We have 4 units, 3 bedrooms each, right next to us that uses that, that only has parking. And then there's another 5 unit, and then a duplex unit that does have some off-street parking, but not enough to handle what's there. There is no way, and depending on how far they open the gates up in this, it's going to wipe out a potential 3 parking places.
Thank you. Next, we have Michael Brannon.
Hi there. My name is Mike Brannon. I also live at 410 East Victory Drive. First of all, I wanted to thank the board for all the work you do, because I know you have a very difficult job balancing the needs of the community and the needs of property owners. And I know that takes a lot of your time and takes a lot of thought and very careful consideration. I, too, am opposed. Craig and I live together. We've lived in our house for 20 years. Previously behind us, there was the Ash Foundation, which was a school for kids. And of course, there were kids out in the parking lot sometimes playing and that sort of thing. This is a little bit different situation. Although there are 22 parking spaces on the property, there is a very broad, on our side on 42nd Street, opening to the parking lot, which now has a fence across it. And because of that fence, really there's only a small area where cars can come in and out for the parking. So consideration of how broad the entry would be on both sides of that parking lot, I think, is very important. As far as what that allows the rest of the units around us to where they can park. The building next to us is a 4-plex, 3 bedrooms each. Often there are at least 2 tenants per apartment. Next to us is another house with a carriage house. We have a carriage house, and our tenant parks on the street. And then you do, again, have the 5-plex that has some off-street parking. And that 42nd Street is kind of a cut-through. So a lot of people come down Price, then cut over on 42nd to slip over to Bull Street, bypassing Victory. So there's a lot of traffic in there, which this is just the worst place for, a hotel to be. And that's my biggest issue. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wren. Next, we have Jason Combs. Oh, sorry. Mr. Brandon, we may have a question from Ms. Wilson.
Can we ask staff to put a map up of the area so that when people are talking, we can see the location?
Rush me 2512 Haberson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brand. Mr. Combs.
Good afternoon. I'm Jason Combs, Vice President of the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association. Our board voted on this last night, and our secretary is online. I believe that she will read you that letter, but I want to address some other issues. First of all, I got in touch with John Anagost, who responded to me this morning. I'm not sure if you saw that email about the process of the approvals, et cetera. And he said that basically this had never been approved for the hotel use by the zoning reviewer for the city. It was missed, or it was mislabeled or something. That was actually finally looked at the 10th of this month, a few days ago. And they were told that they could only build 15 rooms and had to have 24-hour staffing. And he also said that basically this was on a two-year hold for upgrades to water and sewer, during which time other work was not supposed to be done. So if you approve this now, this creates a moral hazard. You're saying, go ahead and do the work, and we'll approve it later. It's fine. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is the business model of this business, trying to shove as many beds into a building as you can with as little supervision. This is a headline from Savannah Morning News from September. Unauthorized Airbnb party ends in gunshots at Chatham County short-term vacation rental. This might have been an STVR, but it's the same business model. It's shove as many people into a structure as you can, have zero supervision, and then depend on your neighbors and this police department to deal with any issues that arise from it. And this guy is in a investment group for Savannah real estate people that the developer's children are also in. I actually think this may be their idea, not his. And also, you're shoving 21 rooms in this place. So you look at the floor plan, they have a room opening directly onto the lobby. I mean, they've really just shoved as many beds in this place as you can. And there's zero amenities for community. This is just a means of putting as many beds on Haberson as you can, and again, to have zero 24-hour supervision. So we're fine with him using the by right use, which is 15 rooms, 24-hour supervision, maybe even build a unit in there for a full-time innkeeper to live. That's it, and I'll let my secretary read our letter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Combs. Is Linda Van Appeldoon, is that your secretary?
Yes.
Okay. Linda, if you're online, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, great. So this letter was sent to Mr. Morrow. On behalf of the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association Board of Directors and our members, I'm writing to share our position regarding petition number 25-005273-CA, a request for a special use permit to establish a hotel with 16 to 74 rooms at 2512 Haversham Street within the TC1 zoning district. The TCNA recognizes that the TC1 district allows certain lodging uses and supports the by right use of this parcel as an inn, developed within the maximum number of guest rooms permitted under that provision of the zoning ordinance. We believe that this framework appropriately balances economic activity with the scale, character, and residential context, of the Thomas Square Streetcar Historic District. However, the association does not support the requested special use permit to allow a hotel at the expanded scale of 16 to 74 rooms. As proposed, this request exceeds what is permitted by right and raises significant concerns related to intensity of use, neighborhood compatibility, traffic impacts, and precedents within a locally designated historic district. These concerns have been consistently reflected in community feedback received by the TSNA. The by right in provisions were intentionally crafted to allow modest, context-sensitive lodging that integrates into historic mixed-use neighborhoods without fundamentally altering their character. In contrast, a hotel of this size represents a materially different use with impacts more akin to institutional or commercial hospitality development. We respectfully urge the Metropolitan Planning Commission to give substantial weight to the intent of the TC1 zoning district, the historic character of the surrounding neighborhood, and the distinction between by right in use and special use hotel approval when considering this petition. We appreciate the MPC's continued commitment to thoughtful, balanced planning and to ensuring the development within the Thomas Square Streetcar Historic District aligns with adopted zoning standards, neighborhood scale, and the long-term community interests. Warm regard, Jacob Jarvis and the TSNA Neighborhood
Association. Thank you, Ms. I appreciate that. I do want to make just a brief comment. Whenever we're listening to testimony from the public, it's important that we're hearing first-person accounts and not referencing conversations that happened outside of here, because that's hearsay. So if somebody has information from third parties, those really need to be submitted as an email from that third party directly. Otherwise, I mean, anybody could make up any conversation at that point. Is the petitioner wanting to come back up and rebut any of the testimony?
Michael Condon, Vintage Home Builders. I wanted to answer a couple of questions, if I may, because there's some obvious confusion. I'm not exactly sure how it got confused about this whole idea of an apartment. When we applied for this in 2022, it was always going to be a hotel, always. At that time, we had our meetings and we did all the stuff that we're supposed to do, and no one said to us from the city that we needed to go through this process. Had they, we would have done it in 2022 or early 2023. We would not be here today. And the reality is that this is a unique situation. It's a situation where obviously a mistake was made on the part of the city in giving us a building permit to begin to construct something that's now 75 or 80% complete. And all we're asking for is fairness here. You know, if we had been told that we needed to go through this process in 2022, we would have. They wouldn't have issued a permit, but it's not on us to understand the rules so much as it's on them to explain the rules to us. And so as a result, we find ourselves in this situation where we're in the sort of, you know, bad timing. You know, in other words, 3 years ago, this may not have been an issue where it's an issue today because the overlay is a hot button issue. And we find ourselves in a position where all we're really asking for is, you know, to finish the project that we began, that we've been working on for 3 years. You know, we want to be good neighbors. I've been involved in the city here since I've lived here in 9 years. I've always been a good neighbor, always been a good guy, and done the right thing by people. And so I wanted to be available to clarify any questions you may have about how we got to where we are today.
Thank you, Mr. Condon. Are there any questions from the staff or from the board? Yes, Ms. Wilson.
I have a question for city manager. Maybe you can help with this. So is it the case that if this is approved for the 21 guest rooms, is it the case that there would be no manager on site, or?
We will have, I'm sorry, I apologize for jumping in. There was a discussion very early on that we were not going to have someone there overnight. We now understand, and we will have someone there 24/7, 365. I apologize for not mentioning that earlier.
I'm not sure. I think that there's inn and then there's hotel and then there's large hotel, right? So I'm not sure. I think in the zoning code specifically, and Ed can speak specifically, or we've got Bridget and others in the room who can talk specifically about what those requirements are. I would imagine that it's specifically called out in the inn zoning requirement because it's a small manageable number of rooms, and that we're the city ordinance is requiring on-site management. MPC staff has recommended approval of the project, but with a condition that it's 21 guest rooms, which I guess is what the plans have been for approval. There's nothing to say that the board can't also condition that there be 24/7 management on site, as well as a condition of the zoning. I think my question is, for staff, if I can jump in, as to what is the by right use right now currently that most fits the intended use?
It would be an inn, and an inn is a limited use. Granted, the proposal meets the condition that it would be located on an arterial or collector. And I'm going to pull up those standards right now so that we can see. And it is one of those limited use standards also that an inn also had 24-hour service. And as you've stated, there's nothing to prevent this board from requiring every 24-hour. Why am I not finding limited use standards for this? Okay, well, it is a limited use, and it does absolutely require, as an inn, 24-hour on-site service. These are the standards applicable within Section 8435 for inns. Number of occupants not exceed the fire code as determined by the manager or designee. Meals shall be provided to registered guests only. On a street classified as an arterial or collector. There we go.
I think he might want to look at the principal use table.
Let's go back.
I also believe that state law has some say in the management of hotels as well, not just local codes.
Sorry, I hit the wrong one.
They have to get appropriate licensing.
Principal use table 5.4. Sorry, knew it was in there. Go for in, and here we are. So here under lodging uses, we can see there are bed and breakfast homestays, bed and breakfast, and these increase in intensity as they go up. So the bed and breakfast is the smallest, bed and breakfast homestay is the smallest, then the regular bed and breakfast. The inn is, I believe, 6 to 15 guest rooms. Hotel, motel picks up 16 to 74 for a small hotel, and a large hotel being 75 or more. And of course, short-term vacation rentals.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I want to see how the petitioner feels about a condition requiring 24/7 staffing.
I'm in favor of that.
What's the most, I think the executive director just asked if I was clarifying this, I think it's a good question. What is the most intense use by right currently on this parcel?
That's a really good question. Okay, so we're looking at TC1 because we happen to be here. I'm sorry, I don't mean to make anyone sick, but I want to scroll a bit. So starting at the top of our, back up to the top. So single family, manufactured residential, group living. So in terms of group living, we have child caring institutions, which are limited, dormitory and student housing is a by right option. Frat house is a special use. Monastery or convent might be a nice addition to this district. Rooming houses and SROs are limited. So again, as long as wherever you see an L, you could potentially have just standards that as long as you meet those standards, you would be permitted to conduct that activity. If you see a check, it is by right. No other approval is needed other than a general staff review. Community garden, park, library, museum, police or fire substation, special transitional shelters, limited use, soup kitchen. Childhood daycare home, childhood daycare center, college or university is a by right use, educational buildings by right, a school, trade school, place of worship, hospice, nursing homes, these are all healthcare related facilities, personal care homes. medical office. They have an indoor amusement, an indoor sports facility. Team club is a limited use.
So a fair amount of pretty intense uses.
Potentially. Okay.
By right. Got it.
By right.
Thank you so much, Ed.
I don't know if this is a staff question or petitioner question. I want to confirm the validity of the comment made. Understanding that Mr. Agnew-Noss indicated that upon their review, it's 15 rooms. I'm trying to get some clarification on this discrepancy between city staff supposedly and or what we are applying in the condition to kind of level things out.
15 rooms is allowed by right.
Okay.
We have to go to you all to get the difference, the additional 6 rooms.
Okay. I'm just making sure I'm understanding that conflict.
Any other questions? Any discussion?
I have a question.
Chair.
So the 22 rooms, were they applied for at the 21 at the city? And the city said, yes, go ahead and build them. And then later on, somebody said, wait a minute, you can only have 15.
Not that we could only have 15, but that we had to go through this process. So the city said, go ahead and build the 21 rooms.
And that was back in 2022?
Yes, ma'am. We've had a building permit and we've been working on it. We had to go back because there was an elevator that wouldn't fit in the building. And so we went back to the building department. When they reviewed it, they said, wait a minute, you're missing this item. And so we said, okay, we'll apply for it. And so that's why we're here today. It was because we thought we had everything we needed and it was discovered 3 years into the project.
If the elevator had fit, would the entire hotel have
yes.
been built and opened before anyone realized this, essentially?
Yes, sir.
On my review of this, when this got brought to me, I think I have the original application, which states the use as a multifamily apartment. Now, regardless of what was intended or whether that was also a city's Scrivener's error or it was put in wrong, I don't know. But the first permit, the first application was put in for multifamily. That multifamily use was approved by the city's planning and urban design department, which looks at whether or not the intended use is allowed in the zoning. As it went through to development services, which reviews the building code, is where issues with the plans and the stated use on the application for multifamily, there were some discrepancies because, as the applicant said, the plans did not reflect the code required for multifamily units. From my review of the use of the application then changed to a hotel motel use. And it continued to go through the building inspection and permitting process. When it got back to planning and zoning, that's when the issue was first noticed or raised that the permitted use did not match the approved zoning use. So there is of course some bureaucracy to untangle here and to look at this instance and where the mistakes or miscommunications or errors were made in approving some of these building permits without having the underlying zoning having been appropriate is a real problem and something that we have to address. But that is the history of the permitting as I'm aware of it.
I have a question, and maybe for Ms. Morrow. So we're hearing this as a special use permit, right? But on the table, it said that for anything above 15 rooms was limited use. So are we doing a special use for the limited use? I'm not understanding the...
No, so the inn, again,
Did you stand here and do this?
And this is, of course, pre-overlay. This is as it stands, right?
Yes. So. So the inn here, you can see in the TC1 district, is a limited use.
Okay.
This L tells us that there are specific standards that must be met. This would meet the limited use standards to have 15 rooms.
Okay.
So in that way, it does not require any board intervention. This board is being requested to approve a special use to have an additional 6 rooms.
So if we're looking at 15 rooms, they don't even have to be before us right now. This is specifically to take it to 21 rooms.
It would be a staff level approval.
Okay. So whether it is transient overnight lodging versus long-term apartments, those 15 rooms, the real question is 15 to 21 rooms at this point.
Right. As a lodging use.
I'm just curious, when it was originally proposed as multifamily, what are the number of units that would have allowed?
21. It's limited by the number of parking spaces.
Mr. Murray, you look like you have a thought.
So I'll speak to zoning and say the TC1 permits roughly 100 units per acre. Then it would be a code sort of a question of what the occupancy is, and the minimum size would dictate how many units you could ultimately legally fit within the building. So it's an interplay between the zoning and the building code.
Right. Mr. Bolton, and I think 25 square feet per unit if you did efficiencies along that.
Okay, so it comes down to, we have a lot of opposition to it. And I'm wondering, the opposition is opposed because it's basically commercial tourist versus affordable housing, permanent residents. Is that correct?
I don't think any of us can speak for a whole constituency.
But we're going to hear from them, right?
We heard from them at the last meeting and then some at this meeting.
Okay.
And let me just, there are letters in the file.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we heard today, I have in my notes is that one issue was the presence of security or 24-hour staff. I didn't hear anything about.
Yes, Mr. Stevens.
I'll try to be very quick about it, but I have always concerns of potential slides of the hand. So, but Mr. Melder initiated when he presented the initial application, he said it was multifamily, right? Mm-hmm. And that is submitted.
Well,
by,
that's what the application states.
Right. And that's what I was just saying.
I wasn't there.
I'm not holding your feet to the fire of it, but I'm just from a procedural standpoint, was that a matter of a applicant filled that information in and submitted it accordingly versus when it got to the development side of things and it was all of a sudden a hotel motel? Because my thing is, if the applicant initially filled out their own application and it originally said multifamily, then I do have some concern of it getting to a later step and changing over to a hotel motel.
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer that. I know that the application that was approved in the system, planning and urban design, approved the use of the stated intended use, which was stated at that time in the system as multifamily, as that being appropriate for the current zoning. To be clear, you know, the intended use changed some point between 2022 and 2025 in the system. The first permit, I think, was not issued on this site until 2025. March of 2025.
It was an approved permit in 2025.
So I think the mistake here, if there was a mistake by city staff, or by the city, process, not by city staff, by the city process, that either the use was put in incorrectly, or when the use changed, it did not trigger another review by planning and urban design to understand whether or not that use was indeed allowable, right? So if that would have been the case, it would have been flagged immediately to say that this
requires more entitlement for this use, and we would have been in a different place, or we would have been in the same place, except it would have been March of 2025 instead of November 2025. So that's kind of the
and he wouldn't have put in the work.
Yes.
Right. Any other questions?
I've got one, and it's actually for staff. Can you tell me how many opposed comments we received from the public?
This meeting or previously?
Yeah, they're both attached, I guess. So there's 133 in the bulk opposition letters. And then if I remember correctly, reading those others, there were none in favor of, correct?
I have not heard any favorable.
No one in favor. And over 133, close to 150 opposed.
I do want to be careful about not making it a majority rule kind of thing, because that would eliminate the need for us to have staff and a board if we just did a blanket, who wants it and who doesn't.
Does staff know how those letters?
No. The public input is part of the decision-making process.
It is, and that's what we have here. But we also have to take into consideration, you know, the rights on both sides.
Yes.
If it was just a community decision thing, then very little would ever get done, as the members of YIMBY could tell you.
I had a question about those opposition letters. Does staff have any clue how those were collected? Because when I went through them, I think the majority were not in this district. A significant portion were not in the city of Savannah, mm-hmm. and a decent number were not from the county of Chatham. So do we have any clue? I mean, there were letters in there that said from Richmond Hill. So is there any clue? I mean, if you read through the bulk ones, they're all addressed. 36. They all have the address on there. And there's Pooler,
53rd,
Richmond Hill, but then there's plenty 23rd. From Victory Drive. So I wasn't sure how these letters came in.
Well, there were some that were businesses as well.
Right, there were businesses mixed in. So I was just kind of interested, you know, why there were Pooler letters and Richmond Hill letters and things. So I didn't know if some call went out.
Mr. Chair, so those were brought to me in an envelope by a member of the public, and they came like that two different times. The bulk of the 83 and the bulk of the other, they were hand delivered.
Okay.
Those groups.
If you wish to speak for the public, we need a speaker card. And public comment at this point is closed.
Question that you're asking.
Is Ms. Brunstedt here? Carolina Brunstedt?
Yeah.
Would you mind Ms. Brunstedt, since she's the one who brought them?
Yes.
Okay. Please come.
We as a Carolina Braunschweig, a resident and a homeowner in the neighborhood, we as a neighborhood organize those letters. As a neighborhood collectively, we are in opposition of this project. We understand that they are allowed to have a 15-room inn with 24-hour staff and security. A 21-room Airbnb is not going to work for us. And we did organize that letter campaign. We knocked on all of our neighbors' doors. We sit out there on First Friday. We can't control who comes through on First Friday, so if some of them were for Richmond Hill, we apologize. But the bulk of those were our neighbors in our neighborhood and throughout the city.
So kind of like a booth that was set up at the First Friday?
We knocked on neighborhood doors. We knocked on neighborhood doors. We had meetings at each other's houses. We emailed them to each other. We talked to each other. And then also at First Friday, we did collect signatures and handed out more letters.
And the staffing is a major concern for the
The staffing is a major concern. The staffing is a huge concern for us, because between 15 and 16 rooms, 15 and 21 rooms, those six rooms without staff, without security, doesn't regulate the noise, the parking, any sort of criminal or partying issues. And we as neighborhoods would like our concerns to be heard.
So I do have a question.
Yes.
So now that the petitioner has committed to 24-hour, and if we make that as a condition of this approval, with 21 rooms versus 15 rooms,
how would that work? Because if you look at the plans, It's just 21 rooms. There's no lobby. It's just a check-in to open a lock.
But a member of staff being on property, even if they're just sitting at a desk like a concierge would, I'm not going to tell them how to run their business.
How would we actually make sure that that happens?
That would be a city enforcement because this is conditional to the zoning. Ms. Wilson?
I was just going to say, well, first of all, you wouldn't know technically because right. you don't know with who stays in, whether it's STVR, any hotel.
Right.
The only way that you would know is if there was a complaint, somebody from code enforcement would go out to make sure that somebody was on the premise. And that's all that you can do. If this board decides to condition that they have 24-hour hotel service or coverage, mm-hmm. then that's what the expectation would be, and that's what the applicant would have to do. So, excuse me, that's not something that, you know, that
I know
can control.
No, I appreciate that.
So that's how that would work if this board decided to condition it that way.
I mean, our neighborhood is changing, right? And we are all very much aware of that. We're aware that development is coming in and security and, you know, hotel security and tourism are priorities and things we're looking at. And the reason why we push for the hotel overlay is to kind of preserve the character of our neighborhood, its history, its incredible businesses and the residents. And that's why we're urging you to kind of go within those rules. And
I
not
really appreciate this,
rooms.
But we are extending beyond just clarifying the petition. Public comment is closed. We are in discussion phase, just as a reminder for all of us. Okay. So we are in discussion, board discussion, and then the next step is opening the floor for a motion. Is there any more discussion? Ms. Jarrett?
As far as discussion goes, I do appreciate what you're saying about we can't just let the citizens decide, but I also am aware of two five-story buildings that are going on in this neighborhood where the citizens were pretty adamantly opposed. And we pushed it forward anyway, and it took 7 or 8 years for him to get to the point where he began construction. And now we have this 5-story mess.
I understand. I just want to make sure that we're not saying how many yes letters, how many no's, and then using that as a metric for making a decision. Any other discussion?
I'd like to make a motion that we go with the staff recommendation.
Can I amend it?
Sure.
Yours, Jeff?
Yeah, of course.
I would like to add a second condition along with staff recommendation that requires 24/7 staffing.
Accepted.
I will second Jeff's motion in that case.
All right. It's been properly moved and seconded. We'll go to a vote. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
No.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
No.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
No.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. The yeses have it. Motion passes. Next on the agenda, we have regular business, special use permit to establish a microbrewery at 1722 Haversham Street, 1711 Price Street.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. My name is Sadie Ash, the Rental Development Services, here to talk about 1722 Haversham. So the petitioner is requesting approval of a special use permit to establish a microbrewery use in the TC1 zoning district. The proposed microbrewery is called First City Brewing and would occupy about 1,400 square feet. The containing building is about 1,400 square feet, and it's mixed use in nature with upper story residential uses. And as we know, the special use process includes review and recommendation by you, the board, and with final consideration by City Council. So this property is also located in the Thomas Square neighborhood and the Streetcar Local Historic District. No exterior modifications are proposed in addition with this request. As I mentioned, it's TC1 zoning, and then here is the future land use. In 2018, a previous petitioner submitted a request to the ZBA for a restaurant with alcohol sales at this location, and it was approved. Additionally, earlier this year, in May of 2025, a restaurant with accessory alcohol sales went before you all, the board, and was approved then as well. The proposed operational hours of the microbrewery are 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and then 12 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Here is the sketch submitted by the petitioner, kind of showing the outline of what the interior is expected to look like. And then, as mentioned, there will be no exterior modifications. And so based off of the previous approvals of related uses of the restaurant with the accessory alcohol use and for the microbrewery use, MPC staff recommends approval of the special use permit with the condition that the permit shall be non-transferable. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mrs. Petitioner.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Josh Allen here today on behalf of First City Brewing Company. We do have with us, I want to introduce the actual applicants themselves. We have EJ and Lindsay, who are the owners, operators, brewers at this establishment. I do want to thank Sadie and staff for their work on this petition. As was mentioned, this site has had special use approval and before that, ZBA approval for ancillary alcohol sales going back to 2018. I think going back to when this mixed-use building was constructed, this corner suite has always been restaurant with alcohol sales. Today's request is a new request to permit a microbrewery, slightly different distinction, but it should be noted that this use is actually more restrictive than those prior uses. When you have a microbrewery under state law, they are only allowed to serve the beer that they actually produce on site. It's not wine, it's not liquor, it is First City Brewing Company beer only. And so we do appreciate the staff recommendation for approval. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have, but respectfully request that you approve of today's request.
Any questions? All right, I've got one speaker card. Mr. Combs.
Hello again. Jason Combs, Vice President of Thomas Square Neighborhood Association. Our board took a vote on this last night. We're all in full support of this. We're happy to see this space occupied again, with or without alcohol. And fun fact, Lindsay and I both have experience managing bars in Central America, so I think she'll have plenty of experience for this one. It'll be much easier, and we wish them all the luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Combs.
Question to
Yes, to Mr. Albert. Question for Mr. Combs.
Any moral hazard with this one, Mr. Combs?
No moral hazard.
Thank you.
All right, that is the only public comment I have. Petitioner is welcome to come up, but there's not really anything to rebut. So any discussion for the board? Open the floor for a motion.
Motion to approve petitioner's request.
Second, Bowles.
Been moved by Mr. Plunk and seconded by Ms. Bowles. We'll take a vote. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I guess I'll vote yes too. Passes unanimously. All right. Next item is map amendment rezone from PD to PD for uses allowable in OI and OIE zoning districts, 4700 Waters Avenue.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Planning Commission. This is Edward Morrow again. Memorial Hospital has come to us with a request to amend the regulations that govern their property. This is a map amendment request to rezone the property from PD to PD. And in essence, what we're doing is exchanging plan development standards that were based on the prior zoning ordinance for those that are now based on NUZO. And ultimately, those would rest upon the standards and the uses permitted in the ONI and the OINE zoning districts. That's office and institutional, and office and institutional expanded. And looking at our future land use map, you can see civic and institutional as the primary designation for these properties, but they do adjoin a variety of uses, kind of ranging from some single family residences to commercial directly across the street. There is Calvary Day School, there's a CVS and several restaurants going down Waters Avenue. So kind of a mixed context for appropriate for a hospital campus. You can see on the zoning map that the current zoning designation is PDS, and that signifies to us that there is a specific plan or a master plan associated with this zoning. And so again, it's that master plan that we are looking to change today. For the record, I'll offer some brief zoning history here. Memorial's efforts date back to about October 2000 when we saw an increase in anticipated growth and renovation of the campus. And so MPC approved a master plan at that time. In 2004, the plan was revised again. 2012-2013, the Hospital Authority requested an amendment of the Medical Center Master Plan to accommodate projected growth. 2013, again, a petition was filed to rezone a 0.6-acre portion from the campus from R6 in order to accommodate some parking. And finally, in 2024, some of you may have noticed the new kite sign that went up over at the Children's Hospital. That was the most recent master plan amendment that we saw at this property. Here on your screen, you can see the current master plan that governs this property. It includes four zoning districts, the PUD IS, the PUD ISB, the RIP, and the R6. And these are districts that were aligned under the previous zoning ordinance. Requested are similar zoning districts. I'd say the ONI also primarily permits institutional uses, educational uses, but it also is a bit more flexible in that it permits some residential uses, single-family homes and townhouses. And so what you're seeing on this new map is an intensity district-based approach, with the most intense being at the center. That would be District 1 in the pink, where the core of the campus is located. That cascades down to the least intense, which is conservation, but the residential parcels that you see that are subdivided for single-family development are actually going to be the least intense and governed by the ONI standards. So in the middle, in the most intense districts, you would have the OINE governing, and cascading out to the sides, you would have the ONI districts. Just to offer you a view of what that entails, the principal district does permit essentially the OINE uses with the added standard to permit height up to 200 feet. That is probably the single greatest difference that we would see here. District 2 would permit, again, OINE uses with structures permitted up to about 120 feet, which represents the current maximum height of structures on the property at this time. And also District 3 also includes those OINE uses with amended height up to 75 feet. Some notable inclusions in District 1 and 2, additional uses that are not listed among OINE, emergency medical services, substations, ambulance services, and emergency shelter uses, all consistent with what we would expect for a growing hospital campus. I will also note District 4, again, this is the base ONI district where you would see, in essence, those single-family homes that represent the transition zone between the existing residences in this area. And finally, conservation, which was shown in yellow. There is no intended change of use there, so that may act largely for stormwater. In reviewing some of the criteria in looking at this petition, staff considered whether the range of uses permitted by the proposed district is more suitable than the range of uses. Staff did find that these districts were comparable. However, the campus does currently operate under obsolete zoning districts. And so the central focus of today's request is to realign this from the previous zoning ordinance so that it aligns with the current NUZO standards. And this will achieve some efficiencies both for the petitioner and for staff in reviewing those petitions. Secondly, whether the proposed zoning district addresses a specific need in the county or city. I think it's worthwhile to mention that Memorial Hospital is a critical employer, non-manufacturing employer, the second largest, in fact. It employs about 4,300 people. Additionally, it is a regional referral center for heart care, cancer care, and high-risk pregnancies. And it also houses the region's only level one trauma center and level three neonatal ICU, as well as the Children's Hospital of Savannah. So that's a significant contribution by the hospital to our community. And this master plan is going to address their future needs for growth. And so with that, MPC staff does recommend approval of this request. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Is the petitioner here?
Yes.
Hey, good afternoon. Just want to introduce a few other people that are here with me today. We've got Mr. Nick.
Please state your name first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ryan Rowe. I'm with HCA Healthcare, so representing the hospital. CEO couldn't be here today, but I'm in the corporate office in Nashville, so holding company. With me, I've got Matt Nitch with Earl Swenson and Associate Architects. I've got Jack Parker with Catalyst Design Group, Civil Engineers, and our counsel, Mr. McCorkle. I believe some of you guys know, but yeah, you can imagine we were surprised to find that we were operating under a PUD under a bunch of obsolete zoning. So we approached the city, Mr. Morrow, Mr. Agonost, and others helped us navigate that and come up with a plan for future development and creating a framework that we can use, one that both meets the needs of the hospital current and future, the best that we can determine with a crystal ball, without the crystal ball, and but is also sensitive to the surrounding context, because that's important for us as to be a good neighbor. So appreciate your time today. Appreciate the approval, and happy to answer any questions we can.
Any questions for petitioner?
Oh, I would note something I just forgot to add. We at the staff's request, we did meet with the Edgemere-Sackville board on 10/22 and 11/13. Met with the board president and various board members to go through any concerns that they had. And I feel like our final proposal is responsive to some of the concerns that we had, mainly context and adjacency of height of buildings relative to the surrounding residential areas. So hopefully you'll see in our plan that we've worked with the staff to soften the edges, if you will, and be sensitive to that context. So that's all.
Mr. Whitey.
Yeah, I have, if we go back to the diagram with the plant. I'm very familiar with Memorial, and on the north side, there's that entire row of residential properties in the blue there. And I know that Memorial owns additional properties above that, right? And that actually shows residential office and professional buildings. And there is an opportunity to build a lot of property there, townhomes in particular, which is going to create a huge snarl of traffic coming out onto Waters into probably one of the most dysfunctional intersections in the entire state of Georgia. I experience that daily. But and my question is, I know that it can be, you are creating a zoning plan that and a PUD that will allow for townhomes and things like that. And it's really just a request that you consider the traffic issues that will be created if should you create a line of townhomes and a bunch of things down that line there. So really, that's really a comment. I know I'm in support of this. I support Memorial entirely, but that just gives me a little heartburn about what's going to happen there in the future. I was around Memorial when they started acquiring these properties as a hedge to the future expansion. So I welcome it, but I'm a little concerned about that.
In the pre-meeting, I had suggested more connectivity to the frontage road along the Casey Canal so that it would be less dumping on Waters, as Waters is the headache. Mr.
And that was basically what I wanted to reiterate as well, make sure that we got on the record that the concerns about the traffic and that intersection, it is a really dysfunctional intersection, and it does create a lot of delay. If there's maybe a way to work with the city in trying to come up with a plan that would improve that intersection, that would be wonderful. But I too support the hospital 100%.
Might be able to guess which of us board members live close to that intersection. Mr. Melder, did you have it? No. All right, any other questions? Gotcha. All right, we'll move into the public comment. I've got, I think it's Marilyn Givens, right?
Yes.
All right.
Good afternoon. My name is Marilyn Givens, and I am the president of the Edgemere-Sackville Neighborhood Association. And we are here today to talk about our concerns with Memorial Medical Center's development. The gentleman who was just here said he met with me on October 22nd and November 13th. The only people present, at that meeting were myself, some members of the board. Will you stand, please? Mr. Brad Tolbert and Julie Tyree. This gentleman I am meeting for the first time today. When we spoke with Brad Tolbert, he explained to us the development would take place on the backside of the hospital, starting with the garage parking area and the development for the new hospital wing. Our concern is Memorial Hospital has property, as was stated, within our neighborhood, and they border along Parnell Street. Now, according to this map, I'm not able to see where the streets are, which is how I can identify. If that blue section that curves around, if that street between the blue going towards Victory Drive is the Parnell Street, that's our concern. That area has been established since 1889, the Sackville area. It is a single family residential area. Memorial purchased those properties before HCA became a part of the Memorial Hospital. And Mr. Talbert said he wasn't sure what the plan was when those properties were purchased. They no longer, according to Mr. Talbert, and this will be hearsay according to what you're saying because he's not here, but he spoke to me as well as the other members that their interest is not in the properties within the Sackville area. We would like to keep the properties within our area returned to us for single family use only, as it was designed from the beginning. I mentioned to Mr. Talbert that the city did a project with the Woodville Association and returned those properties back. And he said he would take that into consideration. The other thing we want to make note of is that their map, he showed us on November 13th the plans for structures to be on one end to be three stories. We'd like to keep it at two stories. And we'd also like for a buffer when they start that construction, which I know is not happening currently or in the immediate five-year plan, is to keep the mature trees as well so that we don't have a blank view of structured buildings and we have the aesthetics that are pleasing and acceptable within our neighborhood for single family dwelling.
I appreciate that, Ms. Gibbons. That is your time. And as far as trees go, that's outside of the scope of what we're looking at right now. But Mr. Melder, is there anything that you could discuss with her as far as her concerns?
Yes, sir, Mr. Sheeran. I've spoken many times to Ms. Gibbons and the Edgemere Sackville Neighborhood Association. They're a wonderful neighborhood. Wonderful neighborhood association. Memorial Health owns, in addition to, I think, this strip of real estate between Parnell and Lexington Avenue, they own several single-family lots heading north above Parnell Avenue into the Edgemere Sackville neighborhood. And as Mr. Wywoody was speaking about, I think the hospital system began 30 years ago, and perhaps that was increased recently or, within the last decade, increasingly purchasing property there as a way to kind of secure its strategic real estate future, perhaps. My conversations with the hospital group has been that those single parcel properties are no longer part of their are likely no longer part of their, strategic real estate. And I think they see the value of being able to partner with the city and other partners like CHSA and the Land Bank Authority to try to return those parcels into single family development and repair some of the Edgemere Sackville neighborhood structure and fabric that has kind of been chipped away at with these parcels. And I think that's a really, really positive sign. I know that's something that the Neighborhood Association has long been asking for some assistance there and has been a dream of the neighborhood for a long, long time. So I'm hopeful that, with this development where we're seeing more density in the interior of the physical plant and some of that development there, that it's going to allow the hospital system to be able to work with the city and the neighborhood to be able to repair those back into residences. So I'm pretty hopeful with that, and I think the city has been pleased with our conversations with HCA Memorial regarding those. But of course, we're going to be in partnership with the neighborhood association here too, and how we drive that forward. So that's kind of the update as it's been unfolding over the last several weeks to months.
Does that help, Ms. Stevens?
Yes. Thank you very much.
And that's my reading too, is I see this, especially with the height growth, is seeing it move more vertical within their own footprint instead of spreading out like they have been.
Yes. Thank you.
Sure. I have no other speaker cards. Does the petitioner want to come back up and make any more comments?
Appreciate your comments. Apologies, I didn't realize I implied that I was at the meeting. I'm here speaking on behalf of Brett Dalbert and Julie Tyree. So they were the ones that attended. We're in general agreement with pretty much everything Mr. Melder has said. I don't think we have any objections. We would be happy to address this in the future for sure. Want to be good neighbors, like we said, and appreciate your time.
Thank you. All right. Any discussion? Ms. Wilson?
Looking at that, the blue, the area of blue, which is district, I don't know, I can't tell on my district 4, and it has the proposed height max of 50 feet, correct?
So in District 3, there's a maximum height of 75 feet, and 4, there's a maximum height of 50.
And 4 is the blue, correct?
So the lightest blue would be 4, the darker blue would be 3.
Okay, so on the north side of the campus, that is between Lexington and Parnell, that is District dark blue, District 3. Oh, there is light. Yes, there's light blue and dark blue. Okay, so in light blue, can you go back to the light blue is 50, dark blue is 75. So a four-story building is approximately 50 feet high. And my concern is four. And the center of Center for Digestive Health, which is right there on in between Lexington, that's only a two-story building. So my thoughts for that strip, my concern is a 75-foot building. Even though it's on the, I guess that would be the east side, and a four-story building across the street from residential single-story on Parnell, is that appropriate?
So inherent in these standards, and I am going to venture out here and tinker with this as I'm standing here talking to you. As we sort of get into the details of site plan review, there are a number of nuances. And so in essence, where you have these adjoining zoning districts, as we've discussed with industrial in particular, now that I think of it, we've talked about the industrial buffer standards and understanding how the placement of structures closer to property lines. There's a certain required tiering back based on how far you are. I expect that there would be similar standards here. I'm going to go to the bottom of the table again without. Okay, so buildings proposed within 50 feet of a it jumped on me. I'm sorry. So here at the bottom, buildings proposed within 50 feet of a residential zoning district shall be subject to the height restrictions established in such district. And so there are these built-in kind of safeguards to ensure that you're not getting an immediate increase in height from one property to the next. And again, because this is based on NUZO, you get the benefit of all of these features by saying these are the standard districts and the fallback districts. And All of our processes for amendment, for site plan approval and review, they're all built in.
Good. Okay. I like that.
Any other questions? Or discussion? Mr. Miller?
I was going to move to approve petitioner's request.
Plunk second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Ntrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next item is a map amendment, rezoned from PD to PD for uses at, is that right? Nope, we just did that. All right, next item is Flume Amendment, rezoned from RSF 5, CPIL to PD on Dawes Avenue.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Edward Morrow again. This is actually a joint petition. The first, a request to amend the future land use map, and the second for the purpose of rezoning the subject 36 properties. If it is okay, I would like to address these items jointly within the presentation. So the first is the Flume Amendment, which would reconcile the current designations of residential single family, industry light, and commercial neighborhood. And all of these would become plan development designation. Also, there are a number of zoning districts that are present on these parcels, RSF5, CP, which is conservation, light industry, and these would all be rezoned to plan development. And on this theme of restoration of neighborhood fabric, this is a project brought forward essentially by the city of Savannah for the purpose of reconciling some industrial development that ripped apart a neighborhood in Ogeechiton. And so you can see the future land use map indicates this is light industry at present, surrounding a strip of single family residential, as well as some commercial neighborhood designation, which is interesting to find kind of this island of residential use in the middle of what is largely industrial, industrial future land use area. And looking at the zoning map on the right-hand side, you will also see a number of different designations and parcels that are largely subdivided for residential use along Dawes Avenue, but of varying sizes, again, in the middle of light industrial transition zoning. And so this is a petition that seeks to kind of reconcile these differences in our policy document and our zoning scheme for this area. The petitioner is requesting an amendment to the Flume in support of a mixed-use, mixed single-family housing development consisting of 32 dwelling units, as well as a mixed-use community support building and dedicated community garden and park space. There are 36 parcels here, again, with dissimilar designations, and the parcels are proposed to be aligned to the plan development designation. This petition was, again, filed concurrently with a map amendment request for the zoning map. There are a number of goals and strategies here that this project is in support of, and I raise this image of the 100-year storm hydraulic model that the city of Savannah recently produced. You can see that there is some inundation in this area from unresolved, in essence, a pattern that resulted from unresolved drainage issues within this area. And so the first of these that I will call out is in Plan 2040 Natural Resource Goal 10 with regard to stormwater management. Master plan includes the installation of new drainage pipes, inlets, and enhanced swales in a neighborhood that historically lacked established drainage infrastructure. And this directly supports that goal of proactively managing stormwater runoff. In addition to those, again, this is principally an affordable housing proposal that has been brought forth by the city and CHSA. And they would be leveraging city-owned assets and land for the purpose of providing affordable housing, which would increase affordable housing stock. It would also use an innovative approach to doing some infill housing. So a number of goals and priorities that are benefiting from this particular project. In looking at the criteria, I would like to raise the third, other professional planning principles and standards and information. MPC found that this particular type of approach is going to be necessary to remediate and mitigate a precarious interface between residential and industrial uses. And so what we will see from this project is a correction of longstanding deficiencies. This will produce some additional affordable housing in a context of hydrological resilience, right? So we're going to see some enhanced measures to take place to resolve what has been historic disinvestment. And so, again, in recent petitions, we have seen members of the Ogeechiton community come forward to talk about industrial development that encroached. And so I thought it was appropriate to share this subdivision plat from 1987, where we can see this is kind of a view of what the residential lots looked like prior to their recombination for industrial pads. On the right-hand side, you can see what they became. But prior to that, these narrow lots that you see are single-family home lots. These probably would have been 30-foot lots, which would have had street frontage on either side, and there would have been a street down the middle here to provide that major access to Ogeechee Road here at the top of the screen. And so this is what was there before the industrial development that we see today, but this is what is planned for this particular nook between two industrial developments. This is the proposed master plan. And the principal uses here that you can see are single-family detached homes. There would be 30 of those. There would be two units of single-family attached, indicated by this orange, and the red indicates a mixed-use community building. The other green areas that you see are residential green space, community gardens, and other conservation areas to handle that stormwater runoff. And so in looking at the rezoning criteria, staff found with regard to whether the range of uses permitted by the proposed district is more suitable, this PD structure does allow the necessary flexibility required. Many of these lots are less than what would ordinarily be required in many of our base zoning districts. The residential lots are about 2,400 square feet apiece, and right now our current minimum is about 3,000 square feet for a single-family detached home. And so that flexibility is permitted by this requested zoning to a PD. Whether the proposed zoning district addresses specific needs, obviously, as I spoke about, this would increase supportive housing for special needs populations. It would increase the volume of affordable housing stock generally, and also it would help us reach some of our stormwater management goals, again, by increasing the infrastructure available in an area that had not seen it previously. With regard to compatibility, this project explicitly mitigates the adverse effects of the adjacent industrial corridors. It establishes a transition zone and buffer for a neighborhood that has experienced a dearth of industrial nuisances like noise, traffic, and just the unsightliness of having to deal with these activities in close proximity of where they live. And so with that, MPC staff does recommend approval of both the requested FLUM to plan development and the zoning map amendment to plan development as well. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is there a petitioner for this one?
I believe we have Ms. Wright and Ms. Liddy with us.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Board. My name is Akila Wright. I'm here on behalf of the City of Savannah. Mr. Morrow basically covered it. We believe that this project is compatible with both the comp plan and the needs of the surrounding area. We had several meetings with the Ogeechiton Neighborhood Association in which some concerns were raised, and our master plan was created with their concerns in mind. This project will, like you said, create affordable housing for people exiting homelessness. We'll have green space, parks, well, a park, community gardens, and a community support building as well. We believe that this will enhance the quality of life in that area, and we hope that you honor the staff's recommendation of approval.
Thank you, Ms. Wright.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from the board for Ms. Wright or staff?
Just a pretty simple, and I think you guys may have touched it, accessibility. Is anything being done with that? I know there's some infrastructure things being addressed. Is there anything from an accessibility standpoint? Because there's not very many means to get in and out, and I know you can't necessarily provide a whole bunch of means to every development, but I just wanted to get a little more insight on that. Okay.
Yes, Ogeechee Road is a GDOT.
Right.
So I believe it's a right in, right out.
Okay. Okay. Just wanted to get an understanding of what that looks like. All right, thanks.
Any other questions from the board? All right, moving to public comment, I've got a Charles Sowell.
Sowell?
Yes, Mr. Sowell.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I own the property at 110 Owens Industrial Drive, which is it backs up to this project. Before I bought this property, I worked at the business that was utilizing it. And I was present when we were told that as the housing behind us, which was some pretty nasty looking stuff, as they became unlivable, they would be removed, bulldozed, cleaned up, and the property was going to be part of the green zone because the county, at that time, the county and the city was in the midst of, annexing all of that area. They would get their, tax write-offs or whatever from the government for more green zone. And it is a nasty green zone that's back up in there. It is a swamp that's been there for many, many years. So these houses, as they went away, they took them out, and there are probably only four houses on that road now. The end, they even took it out and cabled it off so nobody could even go back down in there. But the, having the, single family, low income housing right there behind these warehouses posed a problem, many problems over the years. And this is not hearsay because I'm sure this is in a record somewhere. SWAT used my backyard to remove somebody from one of these houses in one instance. We've had, gunshots in the building. We've had break-ins in our buildings as well as these other buildings on Owens Industrial Drive. And we are against it. We were told it would be a green zone eventually back there. My tenants that are now in it expected it to be a green zone. And up until about October of last year or of this year, it was the first that I had been received any kind of notice telling me otherwise.
Thank you, Mr. Sowell. That is
I'm against it being anything other than a green zone.
Thank you. Next, we have Richard Law, Sr.
Good evening, everybody.
Please just state your name for the record.
My name is Richard Law, Sr., the president of Old Geechee and Dawes Avenue Community. One of the things is that this book, you're talking about Dawes Avenue, is in this book here. And I, on the 12th, I went down to Miami and I spoke Human Rights Day on this book. They wanted me to come and speak Human Rights Day on this book here. Human Rights Day, one of the things that we need housing. I agree with it. I agree with it. But some of the things that I just don't like and disapprove of it. And I'm going to start back. When this thing started, Otis Johnson was in office. Floyd Adams was in office at that time. Floyd Adams was in office. When I say Floyd, when they started building this industrial park over there, they tried to build this industrial park over there. They had to come to the MPC to do it, to get the approval to do it. And then they had to go to the city to get it okayed. This is what I'm saying. Understand exactly what I'm saying. And so when they did that, they lift that industrial park up so high, they turned around and washed Dawes Avenue completely out. Then the city came in. When I talked to Otis Johnson, they came in and they were going to try to run some drainage in there, but they didn't. Michael Brown, they did it cleverly and bought the people out, and they turned it into green space. But what I'm saying is nobody wants to admit that they made a mistake, that, hey, we did it. We need to try to correct it. I mean, I agree with building these houses out and all this kind of stuff, but nobody want to be accountable for what they do.
Mr. Law, that's your time. I appreciate the comments. Thank you. Do you have a question?
Mr. Law?
Mr. Law, Ms. Bolts has a question for you.
I have a question. I just want to get an understanding of the timeline. When the industrial park was proposed and started to be developed. So in environmental justice terms, we often talk about the industry existed and the residents moved to the industrial area, or the residents were there and the industry moved to them. And I think what you said was that you were there prior to the industry.
Right. I born and raised over there in that area. Okay. In 1951, and all of that was residential property. That's where I used to get my Christmas trees from back over in that park over there. So when I was a little boy. So, but that industrial, we still fighting with them industrial. We still dealing with that. Like we got old clock block over there. They come and sit that right next to the community. It just don't make no sense. Don't even make common sense. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Law? Does the petitioner want to come up and provide any kind of rebuttal? No? No, sorry. All right. Open floor for discussion, for board discussion.
Generally speaking, I think with the city being the petitioner and moving forward with this project and adding housing, which is much needed, especially better housing options, I'm generally in support. But I do hear Mr. Law, and I've known that community to have a lot of environmental issues for quite some time. So I would hope with the city leading the charge of this development that there is some type of infrastructure and or to the extent that they can have some type of regulatory and or oversight of the impact of this community, be that environmentally, by emissions and or runoff water. All of these are very long-standing concerns for this community. And as Mr. Law stated, it's a constant fight with the existing businesses there as they try to expand or just exist and disregard that they are neighbors that came after the residents. So I just wanted to raise that general thought that if there is any way in partnership with the city that some of these issues absolutely will be addressed, because this community has endured a lot and is still trying to endure as much as they possibly can on their own.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Any other discussion from the board?
I do have some discussion.
Yes, Ms. Bowles.
A question. Is there a timeline for this project that the city could answer?
Hi, Ashley Sullivan. I work with the City of Savannah. So we know that the city needs affordable housing, that is a very pressing need right now. If this were to go through and be approved, we would be continuing through the design process. So likely working to finalize the civil engineering design plans for the next 6 months or so, and then it would probably be a 12 to 24 month process to actually do construction. Thank you.
Any other discussion?
I asked because I heard Mr. Law say that they've been fighting this issue since Mayor Floyd Adams. And so I wanted to make sure, because, this community has been fighting for a long time. And so I'm happy, one, that I'm hearing that there's cures once, at least once in my career on this board, that we're doing some downzoning from industrial to residential. So I want to applaud that. And I also know that this area is flooded quite a bit. So I hear stormwater infrastructure is a part of this project, in addition to the affordable housing. And then the community building. I think this might be the only neighborhood that doesn't have a community center. So I'm glad to hear that as well. So thank you.
Any other discussion or questions? Ms. Felder?
All of this made possible by the Savannah Affordable Housing Fund, and a really important tool in our community, one that every dollar that goes into it yields at least nine on the private market to be able to develop homes for, you know, and a lot of these homes will be for first-time home buyers and qualified home buyers and working families. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity to extend some of our programs into this area, which Okeechobee, Tremont, Dawes, have all suffered pretty heavily in terms of their relationship to some pretty heavy industrial properties. So to be able to create more residences and more buffers, I think, is a good thing and something that our city council has pushed us to do.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. All right. Open the floor for a motion.
Motion to approve staff recommendation.
Jeff Nutrika, second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. The first one is the flume, and then the next will be map amendment.
Oh, thank you.
Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder? Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Matrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. Now open the floor for a motion for the map amendment.
Motion to approve staff recommendation for the map amendment.
Jeff Matrika, second.
Is properly moved and seconded. How do you vote, Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Matrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. That motion also passes. Thank you very much. Next item we have is a special use permit to establish a place of worship at 104, 108, and 114 Albion Street.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and the members of the board. I'm Subhashi Karunaratne, presenting the staff findings and recommendations for 104, 108, 114 Albion Street. Here, the petitioner is requesting an approval of a special use permit to establish a place of worship. The subject parcel is currently vacant, as you can see here, and it is in the RSF 6 zoning district. And with an area of about 0.85 acres, that is roughly around 37,000 square feet. In proximity of the properties, there is a railway line towards the east and also a drainage ditch with a utility easement right here within the property towards the south. The project that and this is the zoning and the future land use, which is residential, suburban, single family. In the project that they're proposing, the sanctuary will be about 6,775 square feet, and it is anticipated to have seats approximately of about 120. Based on that capacity, 20 off-street parking spaces are required, and you can see that within this site plan that 20 parking spaces are achieved. They actually have 26 off-street parking spaces, and they're also proposing four off-street on-street parking. According to the applicant, there were multiple communications with the neighborhood, and few of the concerns of the community included flooding along that drainage ditch and also inadequate parking, and the narrow street would create congestion because of these on-street parking. And in response, the applicant has proposed to enhance to apply an enhanced vegetative buffer consisting of a 45-foot utility easement plus a vegetative buffer of 15 feet with a fence, and that will be on the side on this side, which is abutting a residential single family house. If you look at the standards at issue, according to 8.3.15 section, places of worship should be located by collector or arterial roads, and Albion Street is not a collector or an arterial. If this special use permit is to be granted, this condition will get a variance automatically, but the second condition, B, is not an automatic variance. They have to have 50 feet setbacks from any residential property, and all around this subject parcels, it's residential property, and in their site plan, they have indicated that they're going to maintain these 50 feet setbacks. Additionally, they can have accessory uses listed here, but what uses they're going to have is not part of the proposal right now, so that is a consideration for the future. And the third condition that they should abide by is temporary uses, mobile farmers market, mobile food service units, outdoor religious or revival activities, seasonal sales. Temporary vendors with off-site promotional sales are allowed temporary uses, but they need to go through a temporary use permit for any of these. Additional findings are that the subject property is in adequate shape and size to accommodate this church, and also adequate public facilities of water, sewer, stormwater are available in the site. And based on these findings, MPC staff recommends approval for the request, with one condition being on-street parking is prohibited. With that, I'll end the report. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here to present?
Good afternoon, Mr. President, Board. I'm Michael Johnson with Shaw Architecture. I'd like to introduce our team here, including our sponsors, Pastor Pedro Castro Lopez and his daughter Antonia. We also have our civil engineer Knox Diaz here, and Peaches Shipley, who is an associate with me. We fully subscribe to staff's recommendation of off-street parking and have already submitted a supplemental document where it was removed. We already exceed the parking on the site right now from what is required, and would have also offered Pastor Lopez actually also owns several properties across the street that have vacant space on them if overflow parking at some point is needed. But as you know, as a church facility, this is really off use or off prime, busy hours. So it would be on Sundays. It would be late evenings, for midweek, services. There aren't outdoor activities necessarily planned with outdoor music or anything like that. Everything would be held indoors. We are maintaining the 50-foot buffer. And what we have done over the last couple months is attend several of the community meetings, met with the community, presented plans, listened to what they have offered us as suggestions for development. The major concerns, one being parking, which we think we've addressed with the additional parking to the site, and two being drainage. That drainage ditch, as we all know in Savannah, is what you guys hear probably more than anything else. We've got issues everywhere. Simply wasn't being maintained properly, and it was causing a lot. It had built up a lot of debris in it. We actually called, 311 and got some folks out there. It got cleaned up. And we haven't had a lot of additional reports of flooding since that time. I think this, property being developed will help, the community because it's more eyes on the site. It's somebody there to watch what's going on. And if that canal does get backed up with material, there's somebody there to take care of it as well. As I mentioned, Pastor Lopez lives right across the street as well. So it's not going to be just a vacant facility.
that doesn't have eyes on it when it's not in operation. There will be people there all the time. With that, I thank you for your service and be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
I just have a question about parking. So just to get an understanding of how many parking spaces you are making available and how many are required.
So there are 20 spaces required, and I think our current plan has a on-site parking for 26, is that right? 27? 27 spaces.
How many people do you anticipate attending service?
Right now, we're planning the church for about 120. So it's not a large congregation, it's a small to mid-sized congregation.
Any other questions? All right, I've got three speaker cards. We'll start with Ms. Sabrina Wright.
Good afternoon. My name is Sabrina Wright, and I live on Albion Street now. I was born on Albion Street. I left and I came back and built a home on Albion Street. I own three properties in the Woodville area. I oppose to this because it's not healthy growth for the community. We need more housing for our residents. We have many churches out in Woodville already, many. And putting another church out in Woodville, I don't think that it's positive growth. That's all I want to say.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Next, we have Frank Wright.
If the council doesn't mind, I'd like for my president, the association president, to speak first before I do, if you don't mind.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, I'm going to come up.
Ms. Anderson?
The reason why, because I think she will set the tone before my what I have to say, because we have a neighborhood association plan already in place, and she'd be more to better to address that.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Good afternoon. Pamela Anderson, president for Woodville Community Association. I speak on behalf of Woodville, as Mr. Shaw said. Mr. Castro and Ms. Antonia have come to community meetings. Two before this prior one, one last year, and there was opposition. We discussed it, and then they went back and did another drawing, came back again. There was still opposition. We are a community, so we hear the concerns, and we understand that we are supposed to listen and give our rebuttals. On that, they came back again in June. From that, the meeting here was canceled. So October, November, we had our community dinner for Thanksgiving. Mr. Castro wanted to speak, and we did acquire him and the other city and elected officials. From that, we discussed that Woodville has 10 churches, and you will find that in our memo, 10 churches, three on two streets. Three churches on each of those two streets, plus four other individual churches. The property, we would like to have seen it be affordable housing. That's what we have been working on in our neighborhood. This here was done and sold, and Mr. Castro stays across the street. Met with Mr. Morrow last month, and he presented a memorandum of understanding from us if we wanted to allow for Mr. Castro's congregant to park on the property across the street. We said, no, we didn't want to start that. That's not going on in Woodville, and we don't want to start. So with that being said, from the drawing that, can you put the drawing up? The drawing that they have, I'm understanding that the clergy will be staying on site. And Mr. Castro said he has property across the street where he resides now. Okay, then you have classrooms for
daycare doing service. We can't see the actual drawing of the layout of the inside plan of the church, so we don't know if that is going to hold for just church or will you eventually start a daycare there with your congregants? Will classroom teachers come in? We do know that churches have gatherings. We all do that, okay? That is fine. But when you do that, we have the Chatham Transit come through that comes from the Cooper Center. It comes down that road from Bay Street, goes through Albion to Division to Fair, back down Alfred toward 80. So if you got traffic on both sides parked beyond the 26 spaces, because your congregant is going to grow.
Ms. Anderson, your time has expired unless Mr. Wright wants to donate his time to you.
All right. I have opposition for it.
Okay.
And that's for the community also.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Mr. Wright.
Good evening. My name is Frank Wright. First of all, I want to say we all need a place of worship, and I'm not really in opposition on building a church. My basic concern as a community, as a resident on this particular street, I've lived on this particular street for 40 years, and the only thing I'm concerned about is the additional pressure of traffic coming on the street. Like I said, I'm not hating against church building. That's what I'm not here for. But I'm just concerned about the pressure that's from the increased traffic that's going to be associated because of the building. I have trouble navigating around the cat bus, and there's a graveyard in the vicinity of my street, and people use my street to park in front of my house to access the graveyard. So that's my main concern, is the increased pressure of traffic coming on the street because of the building. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Does the board have any questions, Mr. Wright? Or... All right. Does the petitioner wish to come up and rebut the public comment?
Oh, somebody leave their glasses. Again, this is Michael Johnson. I appreciate the comments of the community members. As I said, we did attend several of those community meetings, and while there was a lot of discussion about the kind of residents that were building in the neighborhood, some of this, the opposition was not verbalized, at least in the two meetings I attended. What we mostly discussed was this parking issue and this drainage issue. The parking issue will not be, to clarify, there will not be any on-street parking. So I don't see, and it is a one-way in, one-way out design as currently laid out, really the only way to make the site work, which helps with traffic flow. And I just like to speak a little bit about the community in churches in general. You know, it's a fairly proven fact that there's a halo effect to churches. They build better communities. They offer child care services sometimes after school, programs for the community, and generally become economic contributors to a community. I think the national average is about $140,000 annually per church per community. So as a growing community, I understand there's a lot of churches there, but we do see a need for the church on this property. They've got a wonderful congregation, and I'd like to invite you up here if you'd like to say anything. I really have this, Pastor or Antonio.
Hi, everyone. This is Antonia Castro. So I would just like to say that the main point of this worship place, this community church, is honestly just for it to be a place for the community, for us to worship together, for us to have different services together. I don't want us to be like another church in the Woodville community. This is supposed to be a church for everyone, every race, every gender, every ethnicity. Just a church to bring people together. Our idea is not to have any daycares, anything that would not be inside of our church structure. Would we be happy to have, you know, events with the community? Maybe we host them for like a Christmas event or for a community meeting. We would love that. Our purpose and our goal as a church is always just to bring people together, to bring people closer to God, to represent Jesus and everyone and the way that we act, that we interact with others. So we are open to suggestions, we're open to ideas, and we're open to working together with the community. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Wells.
And this is to staff or the petitioner. Are there any letters of support?
No, we don't have any.
Ma'am, for public comment, we needed a blue speaker card filled out. Oh, yes, you're right. You've already gone. So is it brief?
Yes.
Go ahead.
The church is not already there, but we are.
At the microphone, please.
The church is not there yet, but we have cars lined up on the street already without the church being there.
Thank you. All right, any board discussion?
I just was addressing the comment and concern there. Our recommendation is strictly to prohibit it, so at least we have something that's enforceable to this degree should this go ahead and be approved today. So that, in theory, should help address the on-street parking concern.
And they're exceeding their requirement. Any more discussion? Ms. Wilson?
I'll say something. So there's 26 parking spaces. The sanctuary is a sanctuary that holds 120 seats.
I believe they said 27 spaces when they were at the lectern.
Oh, 27 parking spaces. Mm-hmm. Okay.
On site,
27 parking spaces. The sanctuary is 120 seat sanctuary. If everybody rides with somebody, that's 32 people.
To remind you, the requirement is 20 spaces. So they're exceeding their parking space requirement right now.
But I just have concerns about where the people are going to park. And even though we have a no on street parking, and it's prohibited, if people get to church and there's no place to park, I already got on my pantyhose. I ain't driving back home. I'm going to park in the street.
I want to make sure that we're sticking to what is required by the ordinance, because we could speculate as to how big their congregation may be or who's riding with whom, what mode of transportation they're using, but they're meeting the requirement of the ordinance.
Good point.
Okay. Then let me just add one more thing that I was concerned about them not being on an arterial collector street. So then I was a little bit confused about the recommendation given that requirement.
So in the same place where it states that it has to be on a collector or arterial, if you read from here, unless a special use permit is approved, that will act as a waiver for this standard.
I would
never. I believe so, yes.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All right, open the floor for a motion.
Motion to deny staff recommendation.
Second.
It's been properly moved and seconded to deny staff's recommendation. Ms. Amick, how do you vote?
Yes.
Yes is to deny. Okay. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melner?
No.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
No.
Mr. Plunk?
No.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
No.
I too vote no. 2-4. There is 6 yeas and 5 noes. The motion to deny passes. I'm sorry, the petitioner's request is denied.
Just so that you know, the next step is that this will go to City Council.
It wasn't the right material that's being shown up there. Except I called Edward this morning.
All right, finally on our agenda, we have a minor master plan amendment in a PD construct indoor facility at 5715 Skidaway Road.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and the members of the board. I'm Subhashi Karunaratne again, presenting the staff findings and recommendations for 5715 Skidaway Road. Here, the petitioner is requesting approval of a minor amendment to the general master plan of the Cohen's Retreat Planned Unit Development. The amendment would allow construction of an indoor facility, and the proposed use is consistent with the approved master plan. Although the addition does not require the construction of new parking spaces, the parking requirement that is in the master plan currently are conflicting with the proposed development. Therefore, the applicant is requesting this approval for this amendment. The property is located in a future land use designation commercial neighborhood, and the zoning is planned development. A little bit about the zoning history. The site was originally developed in 1933 as a retirement home and was converted into a nursing home for elderly later. And in 1978, the property was rezoned from R6 to PUD institutional to allow development of 9 duplexes in conjunction with a nursing home. The facility eventually was abandoned until the current owners acquired the property and maintained its PUD institutional designation. Between that rezoning and 2019, multiple amendments to the PUD text and master plan were approved by the City Council. And in 2019, the property was rezoned from PUD institutional to Cohen Retreat PUD, which was subsequently approved and adopted by Savannah City Council. This right here is the proposed master plan. You can see in the center the proposed addition. This is bounded by Bacon Park Drive, Bonabella Avenue, and it is 5.17 acres in area. The main building now functions as a restaurant, a gallery, and an inn with 8 duplex units behind it for long and short-term rentals. The Cohen's Retreat PUD establishes standards for commercial, civic, residential, and mixed-use activities on the property. And when we talk about access, the development has direct access, as I mentioned, from Bonabella Avenue east on east and Skidaway Road, and on north via Bacon Park Drive. The interior of the development has private roads, and it counts for adequate interconnectivity inside the property. According to the master plan in 2019, the parking spaces requirement is one parking space per 4 guests, and that was up to 200 guests. And with this amendment, they're trying to change that regulation, and also some other additional changes to surface parking material, as you can see here. Any parking that will be provided on the site must comply by the applicable city standards. including accessibility requirements, driveway design, and restrictions on encroachment to the public right-of-way. Currently, adequate water and sewer facilities are available, but any modifications would need to go through the city site plan permitting process and get those required permits. Same goes for drainage and open space requirements. With that being said, MPC staff recommends approval for the requested amendment with two conditions: that all existing and proposed ADA accessible spaces shall be compliant with the relevant requirements, and any alternative parking surface approved on this shall not encroach into the public right-of-way. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here?
Yes.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Josh Allen representing Cohen's Retreat. I do want to introduce the owners. They've been sitting here for the entire hearing, so I'd be remiss not to introduce them, but we do have Dr. Smith and Mrs. Smith, who have been the owners and operators of Cohen's Retreat going back to mid-2000s now, which seems like a very long time to me, but they've had a lot of fun doing it. Whenever I get to talk about Cohen's Retreat, it always excites me because we always hear the words about these PUDs, about being live, work, play communities, and they were doing this 20 years before anyone was using those buzzwords. They had this zoned in 2004 as literally a live, work, play community with a restaurant, with an inn, with long-term rentals, with the event space, with the art gallery. Today's request is the first time we've been back before you since 2019, because in 2019 we rezoned to PD to give them the flexibility that they needed to operate their uses. What today's request is, we're not trying to change the use of the site. We're simply trying to enclose the courtyard that is already there. Because we have a master plan for the site, we need to come back before you for the master plan amendment as part of that PD. The talk was mentioned about, and the staff report mentioned, the parking. We currently have 193 parking spaces on site, which is sufficient for this use. As part of this proposal, we were actually planning to, and part of the reason for the text amendment was to take an additional number of spaces, I believe it was 16, and use the easy pave grass paver solution so we can delineate more of the permanent parking. Parking has not been an issue for this site, so we're not concerned about providing that, but we thought it'd be a good idea to provide that additional space at the front of the site, with the remainder of the parking being as it's operated now for 21 years as overflow parking as needed. And so we are happy to answer any questions that you may have, but like the staff report mentioned, we would appreciate a recommendation for approval today. Thank you all.
Any questions for the petitioner? I have no public speaking cards for this. So if there's any discussion.
Yes. To approve petitioner's request.
Bold second.
All right. It's been properly moved and second. How do you vote, Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Gone.
Oh.
Mr. Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Rywoody?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is all that we have. We have no presentations, staff reviews, other business, executive session, or adjournment. So
if I may, Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
I just want to take a moment to thank the staff. What you have in front of you is the annual staff calendar. So we do have that out on time this year. We're excited about that. This is driven primarily by the historic preservation staff. As you can see, the title of it is Did You Know? So there's a lot of really kind of cool, unique things about Savannah that a lot of people don't know. And also MPC is 70 years old. So thought we would make a note, with regards to that as well. So
nice.
Enjoy this, I just want to take this opportunity to thank the historic preservation staff, on their hard work on this document, as well as David, who's our resident, genius when it comes to dealing with in design and layout. So thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wilson, and thank you, staff. I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year, everything that happens between now and January until we meet again. Y'all be safe and have a happy holidays.